The car can fail today. And the kids and the dog and the fire detector and the dishwasher and the doctor and the whole world and its entire economic system. But the mercies of God cannot and will not fail. And his faithfulness is not merely great. It is unwavering. The God who so loved this cracked world that he gave, he hasn't ever stopped giving. He won't stop. It's his very mercy that gets us from one moment to the next, and we're all walking around in an atmosphere of brazen affection. Why does he still bless us? Any grace at all is always the most amazing of all. I rub our son's back, and that's the answer I'll tell him in the new mercies of the morning. The answer I will tell the woman asking, why it's so hard to live love. That the word in Romanian for thank you is mulțumesc, a contraction of the Latin phrase multum est, it is much. It is more than enough. It is much. It is abundant. A woman from Romania, she told me, how much of my life has been crippled by anxiety, guilt, self-condemnation, and all the ugly rest, all because I hadn't known I was so utterly cherished by God. Why is it so much easier to forget that he loves us? That he likes us? His love is so much. It is abundant. When I feel like I'm sinking, there's a way to know that I'm sinking in an ocean of grace. Nothing is too much to handle when I think about the so much from his hand. The way out of the pressing too much is to whisper, thank you for the providential so much. The boy breathes hard. This world is as hard as nails and Christ knew it. That's why he came. He strangely blesses the half estranged because the half estranged are his beloved. It is much abundant. That is the answer for every question in every language. The kid inhales, and I think it's so much, so real, for all the breaking ones. We breathe his abundant love. The healing comes with each breath we take in this ocean of grace. For reflection, what are the broken places in your life that cause you to struggle to feel loved and accepted? To question if you are enough. Let God touch you in those places today with his abundant muchness. Where is God asking you to thank him for his abundant muchness? How can you live in grateful awareness of the mystery of abundance you are living in today? Devotion 57, Esther Givenness. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you see, it will be measured to you. Luke 6:38. I'd read it once, how one in four people in a small town was deaf. And every one of them felt like an outsider. Until everyone in town learned sign language. The non-deaf disadvantaged themselves, inconvenienced themselves, to learn sign language. And it was the non-deaf whose lives were enhanced in unexpected ways. Not only did they gain rich relationships with deaf neighbors they would have missed out on otherwise, but they also discovered the convenience of signing across the street to one another, of sign language communicating from atop hills to folks below, of the sick signing what they needed when voices failed, of children signing to avoid being loud, disadvantaging themselves turned out to be their advantage. Brokenness was made into abundance. To do justice, writes Tim Keller, means to go places where the fabric of shalom has broken down, where the weaker members of society are falling through the fabric, and to repair it. We are each singular threads in the world. We all get to decide what we will tie our lives to. If I tie my resources, my time, only to the thin thread of my own life, My life's a hopelessly knotted mess. The thread of your life becomes a tapestry of abundant colors, only if it ties itself to other lives. The only way to strengthen the fabric of society is to let threads of your life break away, to let Christ, who is in us, weave around other threads. Reweaving shalom means to sacrificially thread, lace, and press our time, power, goods, and resources into the lives and needs of others. The strong must disadvantage themselves for the weak, the majority for the minority, or the community frays and the fabric breaks. The only way to care for the disadvantaged is to disadvantage yourself, which is guaranteed to turn out to your advantage. We all could have been the disadvantaged outside the gate. We all could have been someone fallen on hard times into hard ways. We could have been the one fighting marauders threatening to slit our children's throats in the middle of the night. We could have been the one born into a slum, violently raped and left for dead, the ones born into AIDS, into starvation, into lives of Christless desperation. The reason you are an Esther inside the gate for such a time as this is to risk your life for those outside the gate. If I perish, I perish. There are so many of us sucking down lattes and dying of thirst, dying for something more, for something abundant. There are so many in need, and so many Esthers who thirst for more than vanilla services, sweetened programs, and watered-down lives, hungry for some real meat for their starved souls, some dirt under the fingernails, some real sacrifice in the veins. I know why I keep writing a cross on my wrist. There are those who are saved, but only by the skin of their teeth, because they cared most about the comfort of their own skin and only minimally about anyone else's. They will have a hardly abundant entrance awaiting them in heaven. But those will not be the Esthers. There are those who would rather turn a blind eye to the needy than turn to the needy and be like Christ. Those who would love playing at being Christian more than actually being one and loving giving. But those will not be the Esthers. There's a whole generation of Esthers who want to be the gift, want to give it forward, whatever's in our hands, who want holy more than hollow. There's a whole Esther generation, and it is we who want the abundant life of going lower, to love the least, the lonely, and the lost. The world needs people who will defy cynical indifference by making a critical difference. Every one of us can start changing headlines when we start reaching out our hands. We can be concerned for the poor, but be no less concerned for us rich who claim not to be rich, so we can excuse ourselves from giving. Go ahead and show concern for the poor, but be no less concerned if we've merely done enough to assuage our consciences, just enough to pat ourselves on the back, but not enough that we've ever felt true sacrifice, that we've ever actually broken and given. What if caring for the poor was more than just caring about easing our consciences? What if caring for the poor means sacrifice? And what if this is the way to be satisfied and know abundant living? It isn't having that makes us rich. It's giving. Give sacrificially, live richly. Maybe all we really want is more of God, abundance of Him. For reflection, where in your life do you see your soul too tightly tied to comfort, to advantages, or to things, so tightly tied that it's causing a kind of soul brokenness? How do you sense God calling you to be an Esther for such a time as now, to sacrifice and disadvantage yourself, to risk like Esther, to live broken and given, so you can know abundant living? Devotion 58, Passing the Peace. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. John 13:34. We're all more beautiful than we know, because we're known and seen and loved in ways we don't know. Not one of us ever walks alone. In New York, the loveliest lady leaned over to me at the check-in counter and said, "I think I know you, and we're already friends." This is always a true story, no matter where we are. There's no such thing as a stranger. We are all already friends just waiting to meet. The world may be hurting, but the world is holy. And I shook her hand like an awkward fool, grabbed a pen, gifted her a bunch of book pages with my broken heart scrawled all across it, and she reached for my hand. Our girl was airlifted to a city hospital last night because she needs an organ transplant, and our whole world, and she, and we're just heartbroken. And I pulled her in close and we held on, and sometimes falling apart together is how things fall together. There is no such thing as other people's children. All children are all our children. When one of us grieves, we all grieve. And when one of us feels pain, we all feel pain. And there's no such thing as us and them, but us with them, which means there's just all of us. Then her husband gathered round us and choked it back, his hand resting on her shoulder. Remember the word he's given us. Fear not. Believe. He turns to me. I carry these verses around in my pocket, hand them out to people, a word for the day, a gift. And that's one God gave for us back when our daughter first got so sick. Fear not, believe. Those are the words that the maker of the world has given the entire world. Fear not a grim forecast. Believe in the casting of a vision for more grace. More goodness, more God, an abundance of God. Fear not all the unknown things. Believe the God who knows all things. Fear not each other. Believe in the best of each other. Fear not hope always, and hope has hands, and hope leans into where it hurts, and hope gets to work, so that hoped-for things can rise. We stand there in the middle of the airport, and we all hold hands. One mama flying to her hospitalized daughter, and one believing father who hands out the gift of God's word to people he passes throughout the day. And we pray, because this is where hope always begins, and hope never ends when prayers never end. People. Meet people. Humans, meet humans, because this is who we are meant to be. We find each other, we ache with each other, we hear each other, we hold on to each other, and we pray for each other. It's true that it happens on Sundays, just before they pass the bread and the wine, but it's happening too on street corners, happening in store aisles, happening in airports and offices and checkout lines, the way we, the people, pass the peace. You may not hear the quiet murmurings of the peace of Christ to you, like you do on Sunday mornings, but you can witness it everywhere. The way an elderly man passes the peace of a smile to the woman picking over tomatoes in the vegetable department. The way one dad with kids passes the peace of a nod to another dad juggling a screaming toddler and an uncooperating stroller. The way we pass the peace and hold a door open to each other. The way we hold space for each other to think differently. To live differently, see differently, the way we respect and love, no matter what is different between us. If we pass the peace to every person we pass throughout the day, maybe some of the broken, painful things would pass. Maybe when we pass the peace to each other, we can find a peace that passes all understanding. This whole universe is Grace University, and honoring one another is how you get an honorary degree at Grace University. Everywhere we get to learn. Everywhere is a class. Everything begins the next face you see, the next person you stand beside. There is no greater grant you can receive than to grant grace. Now is when we don't grow cold to love. Now is when we can't let our need to be heard make us deaf to where we need to love. We can't let our increasing need to be heard decrease our need to be compassionate. Because if our hearts no longer have compassion, then our hands no longer have anything to offer the world. Compassion literally means co-suffering. And it's only when we are willing to co-suffer with people that we get to say we have compassion for people. And it's only when we have compassion for people that we get to be more like Christ. And one lovely woman in the Buffalo airport asks me to keep praying for her girl. And I keep nodding yes. Who of us isn't in need of an organ transplant? Who of us doesn't need a new heart? She lets me pray with her, and she shares how she walks the broken way of humility and vulnerability and generosity, giving me bits of her broken heart. And she lets me carry a bit of her brokenness and invites me to have compassion, to co-suffer a bit with her. And this is a kind of healing. I try to memorize the beauty of her. It's never the things you carry that hurt you, but how you carry those things. There's a beautiful broken way that offers a new way. There's a beautiful way we can all be together. There is autumn in the wind. There are geese flying south over cornfields. There are roads and ways to be taken and people meeting people, people fearing not and hoping always, an abundant peace being passed between us all, and gifts falling as quiet as a mid-November rain. For reflection, in what ways is brokenness holding you in fear today, preventing you from living in his abundant, perfect peace? How can you live givenness and pass the peace today? When we live compassionately, we invite each other into our suffering, and we offer up bits of our broken, hurting hearts to each other. Where are some areas where you can co-suffer with another and invite co-sufferers in to pass peace to each other and experience abundant healing together? Devotion 59, Abundant Love. For God so loved the world that he gave. John 3:16. Let your heart live unguarded, and you let love capture you. I wrote that one down on a piece of paper, folded it up and stuck it in my back pocket, like I'd been given the answers to the only test I ever needed to pass. Live with an unguarded heart, and you let love capture you. In the upside-down kingdom, you have to guard your heart from being wrongly guarded. A few weeks ago, I turned to a friend after dinner, when we were walking back down the street, straight into the wind, and I straight up told her that I needed a shield or two to protect my heart. Put your heart out on a table, and it might get mistaken for dinner. It might get cut up and eaten alive. I didn't tell her how my own heart burned from razor-sharp words. Didn't tell her who had said what. Didn't tell her how I had looked in a mirror, brushed back whatever was leaking and spilling, and had vowed, "Don't put your heart down on the table again, or it'll get knifed." I knew it with my head. Transparency is the glass door that opens up a house of trust so love can get in. But my tender and busted heart? The head can know wisdom, but the heart knows its wounds. When my mama stood in the kitchen the other day, over a pot at the stove, I watched how she stirred with a hand missing part of a finger. There are women who walk around with parts of themselves wounded and missing. But they have found their soul, their way. They have found the good life. Mama serves me her soup. She looks me in the eye, and my mama reads my pain. All the liquid heartbreak I keep blinking back. You know, living light and polite is not really living. Living light and polite can be a way of keeping everyone in the dark about what's in your heart. Her words rise like steam from the soup. I nod. Mama knows what I've been up to. Politeness can be a cheap shield to protect your heart, and shields to protect hearts end up being prisons for hearts. But there are days I'd rather my heart be in a prison of my own making than be chopped liver in anyone else's hands. Look, Mama. Live like glass. Be transparent. And you can find yourself shattered. I find Mama's eyes. Let people see past the surface, past your mask, even past your thoughts. Let people actually see your heart. An exposed heart can end up an executed heart. Having a glass heart? It can leave you cut. And for a bowl of soup, my mama gives me my birthright. She says it's slow, so I don't miss it. So I get back in touch with what matters, can be abundantly nourished by it. Paying attention to hearts is the only way to spend your life well. She reaches over and touches my hand. Her amputated finger lays on top of mine. The woman knows. I have no idea if Mama had ever read about a nearly 80-year-old study of the lives of Harvard students, but when her scarred and amputated fingers rest there on the back of my hand, I can't help but think of the results of one of the world's longest longitudinal studies. Close relationships, more than money or fame, are what keep people happy throughout their lives. Those ties protect people from life's discontents, help to delay mental and physical decline, and are better predictors of long and happy lives than social class, IQ, or even genes. Good relationships are the crux of a good life. Mama's tracing the back of my hand with her hand, with her once scarred and amputated finger. Tying our hearts to other hearts turns out to be our best lifeline. The best stewardship of time is making time for relationship, even if it sometimes wounds. Loneliness kills, the director of this world-famous study had reported. It's as powerful as smoking or alcoholism. Mama, her hands stretched across the table, she's showing me how to reach out, to hold on. I can see it in her brave face, right there in her warm, wise eyes. The secret to healthy aging is healthy relationships. Healthy relationships, healthy relationships. Old age can't keep you from love. But love can keep you from aging poorly. I watch Mama ladle out more bowls of soup, set them around the table. Watch how she lives given. She sets the last bowl down, and she lays it all down. Live with walls to block out pain, and you will block out all the love that's trying to get in. Light floods the kitchen, the table, and I claim my birthright. You have to let the love in. Open your arms wide open. And let the love in. No one tells you that the walls you build to protect your heart end up being the walls that imprison your life. The walls you're building to keep the hurt out, they're the same walls that keep the healing from getting in. Live with walls to block out pain, and you will block out all the love that's trying to get in. What every broken heart needs is to break down its self-protecting walls. What every broken heart needs is to be vulnerable enough to share its brokenness. You will see as much healing in your life as you let people see the brokenness in your life. You are as healable as you are vulnerable. I now look in the mirror and search that face with a question. Can you believe your heart is a gift? Your gift is not what you do, but who you are and who he is in you. And he is making your heart into a gift. Believe, be brave, and give your heart as a gift. You give what's good when you give what's in your hands, but you give what's eternal when you give what's in your heart. The only real gift you can give is a bit of your heart. The purpose of your life is to find your gift and give it away. What do you do with your one broken heart? You give it away. Give your heart to God in endless thanksgiving. And then give your broken heart to a hurting world in intentional acts of generosity, vulnerability, transparency, so that you are healed with what always most heals a heart, intimacy. Mama steps in, puts her arms around my shoulders, and she whispers it there at my ear, like an epiphany of light that could burn down all the walls. Your job is not to find love. Your job is to find all the walls you've built to keep love out. I reach out my hand to grab hers. And this is always what happens. When you reach out and offer yourself like a gift, you break down the walls that are keeping the love out. And in that moment, I see what Mama has done with her life, what every woman has wanted for her life. She's wanted to be brave. She's wanted to be the weakness of the best kind of strong. But most of all, she's wanted to become love. Abundant love. She's wanted to be a gift to her people, to the world. She's wanted to reach out and be the gift and break down the walls that have kept love out, all the abundant love. Because there's no better way any woman can live than to be the beauty of a gift. The good life lives given. Because love is a verb. And that verb is given, and for God so loved the world he gave. Love lives given. Mama smiles. And every reaching wrinkle for every smiling woman is a testament to her reaching out and all the abundant love getting in. For reflection, quietly reflect on where you may have walls around your broken heart. Why have you built those walls? What would it look like to believe that your heart could be given as a gift? How might braving transparency let abundant love into your life? What would it look like to take the way of abundance? Devotion 60, Cruciformation. The love of most will grow cold, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. Matthew 24:12-13. Now this is the thing it's taken me too long to realize. What you want is who you are. You are what your heart beats for, seeks for, reaches for. You are what your heart loves, desires, admires, acquires. What your heart wants is who you are. And I confess, I've wanted safety, security, guarantees, wanted to stand with the comfort of the majority, make affirmation or validation my priority, or be about self-improvement primarily, be about stability and popularity and familiarity. And it's taken me too much of my life to realize what I really want is really my goal. And do I really want an abundance of God? Jesus isn't about just forming my mind. He's about forming my heart to want what he wants, to love what he loves, to walk the Via Dolorosa, to take the broken way of abundance that he takes, to form my broken heart into a self-giving, self-sacrificing, cruciform love like his abundant love. Because what we love most is our most basic orientation, our baseline inclination, our default orientation that generates how we move forward. And we're all moving forward towards something And what is that something, someone, that you really want? What you really want is who you really are. And what you ultimately love is ultimately your identity. And how do you put on Christ? How am I formed and shaped like Christ? Form and shaped like a cross, cruciform. This is what took me too long to know. Spiritual formation is ultimately cruciformation. Cruciformation is an actual scientific definition, an actual term in biology referring to the transformation from line-formed DNA to cruciform DNA, cross-shaped DNA. Draw a cross in your wrists every day and ask, what do I want? What do I love? And this cultural moment is begging the DNA of all things to transform from a linear worldview, from a flat-line view of the world, to a cross-shaped view of everything. From flat screens, from flat faith, from flat-line living, to cross-shaped thinking, cross-shaped seeing, cross-shaped choosing, cross-shaped living. The way a life genuinely transforms into abundance is to become genuinely cruciform. We are the Jesus followers who are called to literally follow the one who looked us in the eye and said, if I die, I die. So how can we live anything less? Now is the time, this generation, to be configured by our imitation of Christ. Now is the time to live cruciformation. It can be easy to miss that nothing matters more than this. It can be easy to miss that there's a crisis of discipleship wherever we love the wrong things. That there's a crisis of worship wherever there's loving safety more than loving obeying the Savior. Wherever we want to protect our lives more than lay down our lives. Where we love ladders to the good life more than dying to live the abundant life. Wherever we love comfort more than the cross. Wherever we want self-protection over dying to self. It can be easy to miss this crisis of worship and how we form our time, our choices. But how we form our days is forming us. Everything we do is forming us. Turning to Facebook forms where we turn our faces. Turning to screens forms our hearts. And if we want abundant transformation, Christ must be our orientation. Are we formed by the world or the word? By the news or the good news, by the culture of the cross. It can be easy to miss that there's a crisis of discipleship wherever there's a crisis of fellowship, and a crisis of citizenship wherever there's more loyalty to self and to nation. It can be easy to miss that what you want is who you are, and you love what you are willing to die for. Are we willing to take the broken way of abundance and die in 1,000 brave ways for the upside-down kingdom of Christ? It can be easy to miss. Our deepest security is found in deep cruciformity. No one ever got saved unless someone was willing to be unsafe. Why would we let fear overcome us when his arms are under us? This is what I'm coming to know. There is a crisis of discipleship. Wherever there's a crisis of worship, of citizenship, of lordship, and kingship. What would happen if the people who love the cross chose the Great Commission, not comfort, and became cross-centered, cross-shaped, abundantly cruciform? You will become what you want most. Do you most want Jesus, the only one who has ever loved you to death, and back to the realest abundant life? Following Christ is more a matter of the reformation of the heart than about information for the head. What we really want is what we really worship, and there's a crisis of discipleship wherever we've forgotten our first love. Sometimes I wonder, what makes us want to touch the screen of our phones when we could reach out and touch the heart of God? Do we most want the one whose love we have betrayed 1,000 times, but who never stops coming for us countless times? Do we love the one who comes and finds us when we're lost, who reminds us when we've forgotten who we are, who remakes us when life tries to break us? Do you love the one who's bled his heart out for your broken heart, who's renamed you as his when everyone else rejected you as theirs? who washed your grime and gave you grace, who took your place at the cross to give you the best place at the table, who traced your bruises, touched your broken, and whispered to your scars, you are my beloved. The cross of Jesus proves he doesn't ultimately expect your perfection. The arms of Jesus on the cross prove he ultimately wants your affection. Return to your first love. Jesus, the only one who has ever loved us to death, he died with arms open wide in cruciformation as a saving, self-giving invitation. He died the way he abundantly lived, and now we can live as his imitation. Dare to take the broken way of abundance and become cruciform. Live broken and given like bread, because this broken way of abundance, this will transform the world. For reflection, look back at this journey into the way of abundance. What has God revealed to you about himself, about yourself? What brokenness in your life is preventing you from wanting what God wants, loving what he loves, preventing you from wanting an abundance of God? As you have moved into this way of abundance, of living a deeply meaningful life, how has God moved you? How has living broken and given and loved, cruciform, into the abundant life, been an unexpected and fulfilling way to genuinely transform? What are other ways you can commit to the abundant way of cruciformation to continue the transformation of your soul and the world?
You've been listening to the audio production of The Way of Abundance, text copyright 2018 by Anne Morton Voskamp, production copyright 2018 by Zondervan. No portion of this recording may be reproduced without the prior written consent of the publisher. For more information on other fine books and audio products from Zondervan, please visit your favorite retailer or visit us online at zondervan.com. The Way of Abundance was recorded at Fretless Sound in Wingham, Ontario.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.